And now, back to brainstorming with Billy.
A perfectly good brain wasted.
Now, here's your host, Billy the Brain.
Every show has a theme, and today's theme is taking action. We're learning lessons from each of my guests about taking action in one form or another. My first guest is a groundbreaking consultant and author of 5 best-selling books on empowering men and women. We discussed actions you can take to gain respect and lead the successful life you've always wanted. My next guest is a journalist who writes for the National Review, the Wall Street Journal, and many other publications. We're going to look at violence in football. No, not modern football, football at the turn of the 20th century. He'll tell us how President Theodore Roosevelt took action to save the game from his book titled The Big Scrum. And as always, if you want to join the conversation, you can call us at 639-0008. And you want to keep that number handy because I have Black Widow's football tickets to give away. That's right. It's the Female Football League that is here in Ventura County. There's a game this Saturday, April the 23rd at 1 o'clock, and it's up in Newberry Park. I've got 2 tickets for the third caller to see the Black Widows play the Utah Jinx. So call us at 639-0008. Be the third caller, and you have 2 tickets to see that game on Saturday at 1 o'clock in Newberry Park. My guest, John Miller, writes, as I said, for the National Review, the Wall Street Journal, and other publications. He's the author of several books, including The Big Scrum, How Teddy Roosevelt Saved Football, and another book, The First Assassin, which is a historical thriller set during the Civil War. The Chronicle of Higher Education called John one of the best literary journalists in the country. John was born and raised in Detroit. He attended high school in Florida because his father's job took him there during his high school years. He attended the University of Michigan. Following graduation, he moved to Washington, D.C. to work for the National Review. Now John plans to move his entire family back to Michigan within the next few months. Welcome to the show, John. How are you doing today?
I'm great. Thanks for having me on.
Well, it's a pleasure to have you on. Loved your book, The Big Scrum, How Teddy Roosevelt Saved Football. Football right now, modern football, is facing some problems. We've got a lockout by the owners. We've got renewed concern about violence in the game leading to debilitating injuries. So I guess you can say that everything old is new again. The title of your book, Teddy Roosevelt Saved Football, suggests that, of course, Teddy Roosevelt saved it. So from what or from whom did Roosevelt save football?
Well, like you say, everything old is new again, but it used to be a lot worse. Now, today we're talking about the problem of concussions in football and the long-term health effects on NFL veterans. But in 1905, 18 people died playing football. This happened from the college level all the way down to sandlot neighborhood games. There were no pro football leagues back in that time. 18 people in 1905 died playing the sport. And the problem was severe enough that an anti-football crusade rises up, a prohibition movement that wants to outlaw football. It's led by the president of Harvard. The Nation magazine, which then and now is a respected and influential journal of political opinion, muckraking journalists, this ragtag band of people who want football banned. And they start having some influence, and it takes Roosevelt to save the day.
All right. Now, interesting that you should call them ragtag. Just for the sake of clarity here, Charles Eliot, who was the president of Harvard University, he was a progressive, so he had very progressive liberal outlook on life. But he did serve as Harvard's president for over 50 years, so I'm not necessarily call that ragtag.
No, I don't mean to diminish him by saying that, because he was probably the single most important figure in the history of higher education. When we think about why Harvard is considered a great school today, it's because that man led it for so long and helped turn it into what it is now. He set those things in motion. But this coalition of people who wanted to ban football was incredibly diverse. It included a guy like him. It included journalists. It included figures like the former Confederate General John Mosby, who was then quite old. And it just this amazing group of people coming together saying, we've got to get rid of football. It's a blood sport. This is like gladiatorial combat in the Roman amphitheater, and it's not fit for modern America.
All right. That's true. I'm glad you clarified that about Charles Eliot. But looking back at this, and to give it some context, some historical context, you said that 18 people died because of football-related injuries in 1905. Do you have any idea how many people died last year because of football-related injuries? Because I know every year we seem to have a kid who dies of a heart attack on the football practice field, or somebody who dies in a game or gets paralyzed in a game. So the game is not bereft of injuries these days, but the magnitude, I think, is the big difference, wouldn't
Absolutely
you say?
Absolutely not. The game is not risk-free. It never has been. But back at the turn of the century, you were having a dozen or more people dying every year from playing. Today we have millions of kids, literally millions of kids, play football. And there are tragic injuries, but they are freak accidents. Back then, they were much more common and fewer people were playing.
All right, great distinction there. We're talking to John Miller, author of The Big Scrum, How Teddy Roosevelt Saved Football. And we really haven't gotten to the point of how Teddy Roosevelt did save football. So he's president at this point. John, how did he step in and save the game?
Well, Roosevelt was a great fan of football. He attended his first football game in 1876. He was an 18-year-old Harvard freshman. He got on a train, went down to Yale, and watched the second ever game played between Harvard and Yale.
Wow.
He became a fan immediately. He loved the sport. He never played it. He was too small. He wore glasses. But he enjoyed it. He thought, this is a lot of fun. Over time, he came to appreciate the game in different ways. He thought it helped turn boys into men. It was used, rough sports, and football particularly, he thought, were useful in the socialization of males. Help turn boys into men, help them make them great American men who could lead their country forward into a new century. In fact, when he was recruiting the Rough Riders in San Antonio, we know the story about how he goes out west and wants to get a bunch of cowboys signed up, and that's basically true. He did, and that's what happened. If you read his memoir, though, he also says he wanted football players, and he got a bunch of them, too, and they all went to Cuba. He became a war hero, and that's what set him on the course for the presidency. So in 1905, when he is president, this problem of brutality in football is growing and growing. This movement to abolish it is gaining momentum. Roosevelt loves football. He doesn't want to see it go away. At the same time, he recognizes that the critics have a point. People are dying, after all. So in October 1905, he summons to the White House the three coaches from the three leading programs at the time, Harvard, Yale, and Princeton. Lots changed since then, right?
Right.
But those were the three big-time college football programs. The guy from Yale was Walter Camp, the legendary Walter Camp, who's really, in many ways, the founding father of football. So Roosevelt summons them to the White House. They have a little football summit. And he says to them, football is on trial. I believe in this game, but we need to take steps to save it. So he encourages them to do that. They go back to their campuses, finish out the season. That winter, they create the organization that goes on to become the NCAA. They pass a series of sweeping rule changes. The most important one is the creation of the forward pass. Because up until that point in football, a quarterback couldn't throw the ball downfield. There were no wide receivers. There was no passing game. And it's that decision, that rule change, that number one, turned the sport away from its rugby-like origins and made it a distinctively American game.
Well, and I think
uniquely American game. And second of all, it solved the problem of brutality.
Sure. And I think it's interesting, and it's really worth noting for my listeners, that football as we know it today is nothing like football in 1905. In fact, you talk about this NCAA committee that was first founded and the rule changes that they made. What were some of the other rule changes? Because it was a radically different game. Like you said, it was more closely aligned with rugby than it was with football. But what were some of the other big rule changes that they came up with?
Well, so the forward pass was by far the most significant, but it was not the only thing they did that year. They increased the yardage needed for a first down from 5 yards to 10. They created a neutral zone at the line of scrimmage. They did things like that, almost all of it with an eye toward reducing brutality.
Hmm.
They thought they would just change the nature of the game, and in fact, it did.
It did. Now, going back to the earlier theme of everything old is new again, today a lot of parents are concerned about children sitting in front of the television or sitting in front of video games and not getting outside and getting enough exercise, and we're becoming a nation of weaklings and vidiots. The same sort of mindset was going on in the 1905, right at the turn of the 20th century as well. And what role did the doctrine that became known as muscularity Christianity, what did that play in it? What was that doctrine?
So, in the middle of the 19th century, there's a lot of concern in the United States that with industrialization and with movement from the country to the city and the technological progress, that Americans were becoming physically weaker. They didn't engage in as much manual labor. They were just as a race almost. Americans were becoming weaker, and this was a concern that was widespread. It's shared in Europe. A lot of Europeans have similar fears, and they wonder how can great nations continue to be great if they're raising a bunch of weaklings. And several groups start to take steps to address this perceived problem. One of them is a movement called Muscular Christianity, which says that to be a good Christian, you not only need to take care of your soul, but you need to take care of your body. And out of this comes, for example, the YMCA movement. And they build gymnasiums, they encourage physical fitness, and this spreads like wildfire. It comes to America. And there's this whole muscular Christianity movement that is about physical fitness and being healthy, and it begins to overtake the culture. So before the Civil War, there were virtually no organized team sports in American life. It just didn't exist. And then after the Civil War, you have this explosion of them. Professional baseball, football is invented. Basketball was invented at a YMCA club in Springfield, Massachusetts. It was invented so that people would have something to do in the when it was winter. So there's this social movement to correct this problem, and it's very much like what we have today.
Yeah, it's interesting that coming out of your book,
kids not getting outside.
Yeah, that's true. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to walk over you there, John, but I think it's interesting coming out of your book, The Big Scrum, that we have two major institutions that we take for granted today, the NCAA and YMCAs, were a direct result of this. Now, let's continue on with the story. So if Charles Eliot lost, if there is such a thing as losing this battle over football with Teddy Roosevelt, what impact did Charles Eliot have on the game over time?
Well, he hated football and he wanted to ban it. He did not succeed in that. On the other hand, he helped create a social movement that reformed the sport in ways that probably on reflection he might conclude were positive. He still probably didn't like football, but he would have thought this is better than what it was. He was a peculiar guy in a lot of ways when it came to athletics. He was not anti-athletics at all. He actually rode on a Harvard crew team. He was personally fit and believed students need to be personally fit as well. But he thought particular kinds of sports were corrupting. He didn't like baseball either. He thought when a pitcher threw a curveball, it was an act of deception, and that was ungentlemanly. And he thought, in football, if a running back attacked the weakest point in a defensive line, again, that was dishonorable. The running back should go at the strongest point in the defensive line, because that was what a real gentleman did. So he had these sort of peculiar notions. He thought a sport that needed umpires and referees was a little crazy, because it suggested that gentlemen couldn't regulate their own behavior. Mm. These are peculiar notions, but he really believed in them, and this affected his view of football. So yes, he lost. He didn't ban football, but this movement he helped create, I think, made it a better game.
Yeah, we're talking to the knowledgeable author John Miller, author of The Big Scrum: How Teddy Roosevelt Saved Football. And John, now let's fast forward to the modern day here. Do you think that we're going to see a resurgence in anti-football sentiment or even a prohibition movement here in the United States as a result of some of the scientific studies that are out today about head injuries and repetitive trauma and how they lead to permanent brain damage?
I don't think we're going to see a prohibition movement, at least not a serious one. We are already seeing some responses to concerns about concussions. Just last month, the NFL moved the kickoff line in football. They're not going to kick off from the 25-yard line anymore. They're going to kick off from the 30-yard line. And the reason they're doing that is because they want more touchbacks and fewer kick returns, because kick returns can be highly violent plays.
Yes.
With big men colliding at full speed in you know, a human demolition derby. So they've actually made a rule change, a small one, but one that they believe will reduce the incidence of serious injury in the game. So we're seeing things like that. There are a lot of discussions like it going on. Football is aware of this issue, and the players' union is interested in it. And football, throughout its history, has never been afraid to innovate. You know, baseball rarely innovates.
Right.
The rules don't change. They're extremely reluctant to bring in, you know, video review and things like that. Football has never been afraid to innovate. This is a sport, after all, that now sticks, you know, radios in the helmets for quarterbacks. So they're constantly tinkering changes. So I think football is capable of addressing this on its own and solving the problem, and you know, maybe not to the complete satisfaction or speed of everybody, but they're aware of it, doing what they can without ruining the essence of the game.
All right. We're talking to John Miller, everybody. And, John, you've got an amusing story. I'm going to go personal on you here, but you've got an amusing story about your 5-year-old son returning from school one day. He matter-of-factly kind of walks up to you, and he says, in a very matter-of-fact way, he would have preferred that you were a policeman versus a writer. So how do you explain your job as an author, as a journalist, to your 5-year-old son?
Well, he's now 9, so it comes into a little clearer focus. But, you know, when they're little, they do kind of wonder what you're doing when you stare at a computer screen all day, or at least they perceive you as doing nothing but that. In a sense, that's, you know, sort of a sedentary life, and that's what you're doing. But they also see when I publish a book, for example, they see the work product. It's an actual, you know, tangible physical item that they can hold, and they see my author photo, and this new book, The Big Scrum, is actually dedicated to my kids. It's my 5th book, and I figure it's about time I gave one to them. So they've enjoyed that as well.
It's great. We've been talking to the author, John Miller, author of The Big Scrum, How Teddy Roosevelt Saved Football. John, if people want to learn more, if they want to learn more about you or learn more about The Big Scrum, where would you direct them to go on the Internet?
My website's a good place. It's heymiller.com. That's heymiller.com. It has... I have a blog on it, has information on the book, all kinds of stuff.
Oh, that is great. We've been talking to John Miller, author of The Big Scrum. John, thank you so much for being our guest here on Brainstorming with Billy the Brain. We'll talk to you down the road.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you.